Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of the Tenets Podcast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. Stark, how are you doing this week?
Pretty good.
Good to hear. We're also joined by our new full-time co-host, Zynode. Zynode, what's up, man?
Hello. How you doing?
Doing pretty well, thank you. And completing our conversation with the Lore Seekers, we have Jibs on this week. Jibs, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and hang out with us. So last episode, we had Cash on directly following the Vegas reveal of Greymoor, the insanity. And unfortunately, you couldn't make it out because I know there was a sickness in your family. So you did the amazing parental thing and stayed home, held down the fort, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it gave you guys a cool opportunity. I was catching up on all your content like this last week, you know, just all ESO stuff buzzing. And I liked how you guys did work it, you know, you being on the ground at home to be able to tweet some of that stuff out. And that was very, very cool. I think you guys did a fantastic job there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It was actually a blessing in disguise. He was down there networking, meeting and greeting, and I was at home sitting there in my kitchen working. So it worked out.
It was one hell of a reveal as we talked with Cash. Yeah. Everyone out there knows by this point in time that was something crazy, and we really wanted to get your take on this. So we're kind of running through a lot like we did last week, and let's just kick it off. As everyone knows at this point, Herastorm is on its way. That is the quarter one DLC, and we think we have an estimated time of release for this. So today's date of recording is February 2nd. At the very end of January, that was Friday, Gina and Jess were going to do a live stream with Finn. Didn't happen due to technical issues, but I think they were going to give us the release date. Now, putting our speculative caps on, we saw with the daily login rewards this month, only 21 days out of a month that actually has 21 login days out of 29 total. So they confirmed on Twitter they're going to be cutting a week this month just to let people re-download the game. Because for those out there that are not in the know, Herastorm is bringing with it a big download, a big re-download.
Mm-hmm.
So can we touch on this for a sec? Because it's way down in the show notes, but we were just discussing this off air. For those in the chat or in this group here that have downloaded the game already on the PTS, we got, you know, the PTS version. That was a whole re-download of its own. I'm clocking in at 66 gigabytes of space taken up for the game. That's the new one versus my old of 82, meaning they may have cut out about 16 gigs worth of bloat in there. And that seems about right for everyone else in chat, right?
Yeah, pretty close.
I'm 66.8 and it was 82 at the moment.
Gotcha. So we...
that's your PS4 build or that's your PC build?
Sorry?
That's PS4, that's PC. Oh, PS4 doesn't
have PTS. PC. What am I this asking? Yeah. This is on the PTS. So, I mean, whether they're going to shave anything else off that before they put it live or not, but I don't know. But at the moment, it's a 16 gig drop. So it's pretty good. That made my heart work again because that was full.
Yeah, that's something serious, too. I mean, for just, you know, files that they're no longer even utilizing, right? Or that they've put in a more efficient way by this point in time. That's a nice 16 gigs to clear out. For someone that's working off a smaller drive, whew.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot. So not only are we getting this amazing, you know, reduction with Herastorm's DLC, but we're also seeing some memory leaks fix. Now, I didn't notice a huge fix on my end for those that in this group got onto the PTS. Did you see anything? Or are you still?
I haven't, so
go on, you go.
You know what a memory leak is, Kyle? Like,
I mean, why don't you give us a step back explanation?
Talk to me like I'm five.
Exactly, Jim.
Okay, when two ram sticks love each other very much, it's not relevant.
Oh, it's that kind of explanation.
Yeah. Didn't know
that.
Okay, so saucy. What happens is when you're running a program on a computer, you need to allocate memory for that program to run. Mm-hmm. And you'll do this using the page file. I'm probably pissing off some other people who know what they're talking about right now. But the basic idea of a memory leak is normally when you stop using a chunk of memory, you want to release it back to the operating system. And for whatever reason, you don't. So that's still allocated by the game, even though it's not using it. And over time, this will keep adding up and it will chew up more and more of the available system memory. You can't access it. You can't do anything with it. And you'll see performance degradation because that data, that memory is not available for use. The game thinks, or the system thinks it's in use. The game thinks it's gone. And between those two things, it just basically it's eating up memory you thought you were using until either the application crashes or you quit out and restart. What this means is it's really hard to actually see a memory leak in any short period of time.
Right.
If it depends on what it is, you know, what the exact how large that leak is, but in general, this is something like if you're sitting there for 6-7 hours, that's when you'll start to see the memory leak, like the full effect of it kicking in. Versus when we're logging into the PTS, we're not really sitting there for 8 hours just playing. Usually, at least personally, I log in on the PTS, I mess with one or two things, and then I go to deal with something else, and I don't really just sit there logged in. Yeah, Zai is the exception. You might have seen something.
Yeah, as I say, I think I spent probably 6 hours in there myself. I'm clocking some time, man.
It's also a situation where a lot of other problems that can cause, you know, performance deterioration over time can get lumped in as memory leaks when they're not. So you can end up where it's like, oh, this is a memory leak. No, it's not. It's something else. I haven't seen any evidence of a memory leak while I've been on PTS, but I'm not running a memory track. Like, I'm not actually tracking memory. I'm not running Cheat Engine or anything like that to see what's going on with my memory while I'm on the PTS. So, oh, by the way, that's the actual use for that tool. It's to monitor what's going on in memory at any given moment. There's a whole a range of programming tools designed to do that kind of thing, and Cheat Engine is just one of those. But yeah, if that fix works and it goes through to live, and we will all benefit from it, but it's one of those that's really hard to see on PTS, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Unless you're specifically someplace where
you're right. Because it's also something where you'll notice maybe for some of the console players particularly that you'll see it on PC as well, but the longer you're in a trial, the slower it gets and the worse it gets. And it doesn't matter how long you're in there. It just means that your performance is going to suffer. But obviously, the longer you're in there, that's when it does matter, as it can get to a point where you can't even play it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
On PTS, it's very hard to gauge that, obviously, because the population is a lot smaller. On the first day or so, it's flooded. But after about a week or so, it's only very few people on there. So in populated areas, it's hard to test. But over long periods of time, doing what I normally do on PTS, which is several hours a day, I have noticed a substantial difference just by my own routines on there. Because usually if I'm on there for about 3 or 4 hours, I'm not normally on there for about 8 to 10, but about the 3 or 4 hour mark, I'll start noticing some really awful dips. There'll be spikes, there'll be lag issues, light attacks and stuff are really hard to apply because it's start getting stuck, some abilities wouldn't fire, all that kind of stuff. At the moment, so far, it's been really bloody smooth. So I don't want to jinx it because it might just be a PTS thing, and when we go live, it could be different. But so far, over long periods of time, I'm seeing some nice smooth performance on it. Doesn't seem to be suffering at all. I don't seem to see any flags for memory leaks or anything like that, especially since I run lots of programs in the background at the same time.
Yeah.
Before, it used to shut down Photoshop. I couldn't open certain files.
Photoshop so is...
It would just go, hey, we need loads for this program because your file's massive. And sorry, we can't open it while you're running this game anymore. Wow. That was an issue for the last month or so.
Photoshop is a notorious memory hog. Like, that'll just eat your RAM. Yeah.
Yep.
I was going to point out something. You mentioned something, Zai, that's also really important. The console for the consoles, this is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
especially
is.
For things like trials, because I don't know if it's map-based or if it's just a function of you've got 12 people in there using abilities constantly for extended periods of time, but trials really suffer from the leaks.
Female last boss is the worst.
Yeah.
That can really hog after a while for no good reason, as far as you're concerned, just playing the game. You think you're not doing anything wrong. Maybe it's a bit warm, but the memory leak in there is pretty bad. Hopefully that will help that quite significantly. If it does translate, even on the solo side of things, or even on the dungeon side of things, we've got four of you. What I've seen so far, if that does translate over to live servers, people are going to be very impressed with it so far. But again, I don't want to jinx it, but I have seen some improvements.
And Jibs, awesome. Do you play, you're primarily PC, is that right? And then you guys have guilds branched out across consoles. Do you play That's on right. any of the consoles as well, or just PC?
Man, I dabble on console. It's like, it's weird because you go to console and I get this old school vibe of, you know, when you would play Morrowind or Oblivion back in the day before you were playing on PC. And so I go to console for that feeling. But otherwise, yeah, I'm mainly PC.
Well, I'm very excited for this. I mean, I actually see here, I was looking at the ESO news post where they talked about the update. Like you guys just said there, it's going to be really good for console players. This should be a big improvement. So it's saving approximately 30 gigs on the PS4 and the Xbox to kind of clear that up. And they're saying it will save 16 for PC. So we are right in that margin. Like, we can confirm 16 on PC. Good. Thumbs up. 30 on console. Yeah. It's really nice.
All three of us have checked our systems and they're all the same amount of space saved. So it's pretty accurate.
Well, I'm really excited for this to roll out. So we're guessing this will probably roll out sometime around February 17th for PC players. That's when we're guessing. Maybe the 24th too.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know for definite, but obviously when it comes to PTS cycles, I mean, we said this off mic, but generally chapters are around sort of 4 or 5 weeks, sometimes pushing 6, depending on when they're out, as far as PTS is concerned. And the smaller DLCs, kind of Q1, 3, and 4, tend to be around 4 weeks. We're coming up to number 3, so we're probably looking at another week, maybe 2 weeks tops, if we're lucky. Maybe pushing it towards the end, but I would assume February towards kind of the end of it, and then March at the very beginning for console, I would imagine. Mm. Don't know exact dates, though.
With Midyear Mayhem, I haven't been paying attention. Did they do a EU swap over onto the PTS? Or is that still pulling NA?
That didn't change. It's still NA at the moment, but Monday we'll get a new cycle, so I'm not sure about that.
Oh, okay. Okay, because it's usually been you get 2 weeks of one, then 2 weeks of the other with a build update when they swap.
So that's something.
Have we gotten a second build update for it yet?
We've had the first update, then we've had the second one, and we'll do a third on Monday. That's something else performance-wise on though as well, because I play on every single server, all 6 of them, and including obviously the PTS, if you want to call that 7. Jeez. And that does transfer sometimes to EU, sometimes to NA. Now, I do notice a ping differentiation with the NA one. And I had noticed before performance issues and such when that's an NA transfer. This time, I did not notice any issues. I could play it just like I did on EU. It looked in the stats like the ping was roughly what it used to be before, but the actual fluidity of the game was much, much better. So if that's affecting me on the lower end, people that have much higher ping, especially some of those perhaps in Australia and that, I don't know what they're going to receive on it, but hopefully that will help them as well. Because I am seeing
Australia's been out. Australia's been a touchy subject for a while, simply because
it's like they're 300 getting, for them.
Well, they're getting routed through Hong Kong.
That's true.
So it's like their net traffic has been a mess for a while for the game.
Well, hopefully this helps out a little bit in some ways. Like, I mean, I know they're going on and doing more throughout the year, so I'm very hopeful they did update that performance plan that they've rolled out that Rich mentioned before. You know, they updated that just on Friday, the 31st of January. So if anyone wants to check that out, that's up on the ESO website. I highly recommend giving it a look over, because it does look like they're very up on trying to get us better performance this year, which is, I think, really well timed when we have all these amazing Skyrim friends about to join us. So why don't we kind of talk about this? Jibs, this is especially where we want to get your feedback on things, because as we know, the big announcement was that we are going to explore Western Skyrim, and they shouted out some amazing keep names and stuff or holds there, you know, specifically Solitude and such. What can I ask in summary of this whole event? What's the one thing you're most excited for, Jibs?
Gotta
pick one.
Gosh, that's hard.
It's very hard.
Come
there's
on,
vampires.
Man.
I know. I'm putting you to the you know, the fire here. There's vampires, antiquities, Black Reach. I mean,
Cash can do it.
Oh wow!
Cash could do Nord it. Hero from the cinematic, you know, 5 years ago again.
Oh yeah, that cinematic was gnarly. I'm a huge Dwemer fan, so I'm just gonna say, gosh, I can't pick one.
Okay, it's fair. We
Black Watch. Let's do Black Watch or Black Reach.
Black Reach or Black Watch?
Black Watch. Listen to me. Black Reach.
That place is badass looking with the castle and everything from that cinematic trailer. I wasn't sure what we were going to get down there. That is not what came to my mind when I saw that. I was blown away.
Yeah, you know, it looks like they're doing it right too, you know, because Black Reach is definitely not a small area. It's vast. It's huge. There's all kinds of mystery to it. And so just seeing, I mean, you know, on my end, I've only seen the screens, you know, from the official releases. And so that being said, I feel like they're nailing it. I mean, they're doing it right. And, you know, I know you said one, but I'm going to throw one more in there. To be honest with you, I'm most genuinely excited about is the new wave of players that are coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there is so much hype, and I'm sure you're seeing it in your show and in your community and your social media feeds. We're seeing it over at Lore Seekers. It's just a crazy, you know, things were already running at a 10, and then they just like went to 100. It's yes. In a matter of 48 hours. And so, you know, it's exciting times for all content creators, all podcasts, YouTubers, streamers, whatever it is. It's such a fun, fun time. I've always said, and I still say it, I still believe it, I feel like we're at the golden age of ESO. Like, there's nowhere to go but up.
I strongly agree with that, too. I mean, there was something very palpable, you know, in the crowd there. And I think that reflected well, you know, in a lot of the content, too. You could just see people losing their minds with excitement. Yeah. And this is obviously a zone that... So it's interesting. Like you said, we have a ton of new players coming in. I would say, anecdotally, from what I've seen, I'd say about half of my community has played Skyrim before, like the single players. But there is a large community of ESO players that have never dabbled before. So this is going to be some people's first experience.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about
that? On the other side of the coin as well, because... Mm-hmm. This is the thing where when Elder Scrolls first came out, Elder Scrolls Online, people were like, oh, is there Skyrim Online? No, it's not. Right? So they just dived under the sofa and just said, I'm going to stay in my one-player RPG. Mm. Lots of people did that, and lots of people also on the other side of the coin came to Elder Scrolls Online. So for 5 years or so, people were like, is there Skyrim in it? Is there Skyrim in it? Is there Skyrim in it? And if it isn't pure Skyrim, no one's of that side are actually interested. They just want to stick to their game, which is fine. And then all of a sudden, Zoss just goes, hey, here's Skyrim. Everyone's coming. They all come to watch. They want to join the game now because Skyrim is now an online part of the world. Regardless of the smaller side that we had already, this big hit is bringing a lot of the single player RPG players into the game. I've gotten a lot of questions from people that have never played Elder Scrolls Online. Hey, how is Skyrim? I heard it's coming to Elder Scrolls Online. They're going nuts for it.
Yeah. And you know what? And to kind of go off that, Zyno, I just feel like, you know, having that single player experience in Skyrim has, you know, this fantastic tale, you know, this all these branches to this main story, right? Well, when they come over to ESO, I feel like they're getting another side of the coin of Skyrim. They're getting this dark gothic tale that's not told or not felt as much in the single player RPG.
I mean, you get the Dawnguard stuff really nails into that, though.
That's true.
That's the weird thing. Like the chapter setup for this year is kind of... at least initially leading hard into the Dawnguard part of Skyrim, which is like, that's one DLC. It's probably some of the best content for the game, but it is kind of strange. It's like, okay, but this still isn't Skyrim. It's going to be this specific area of it.
I think Rich nailed it as well when he was doing the presentation for it, because I mean, to the untrained ear or eye, if you like, you know, Skyrim, Elder Scrolls Online, they're like, oh yeah, we played Skyrim before. You could have people with that attitude, but then he emphasizes on the fact that Elder Scrolls Online is 1,000 years before. So that instantly pricks people's ears up to go, I wonder what's there. So they've hit some really, really hyped up landmarks, seeing it in a whole different light with basically a license to print a story. You can do whatever you want with it because we don't know what happened.
Exactly.
And that is exciting for people as well, because although they think they know everything, now they can find out what potentially could have happened or did happen before. And that incentivizes interest as well.
It's very well said. I mean, Rich also, I believe, said the words like something akin to, we are telling our own story in Skyrim, which is, again, exactly, very important because these are landmarks that we've seen before. And that's a good thing. But the fact that there's 1,000 years, like you just said, that means a ton of history happens between now and then. There is so much fluidity and area for them to play around. We touched on this before, but I think the idea of doing 60% of the content in Overworld Skyrim versus 40% in Blackreach, that is a cool, distinctive direction to go in. The idea of having some of his own underground is a little new.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
It's
actually really clever. It's a really clever way to get around some of it. One of the big complaints with Elsewhere was about the landmass. This has been true going back to all of the chapters, because with Somerset, people were looking at the map and then they were like, but most of this isn't playable. With Vard and Fel, they were looking at it and like, but no, it's so small. And it's like, no, it's still a lot of space. And there were even the guys who were taking the Vardenfell map back in the day and trying to compare it to Hrothgar in size and trying to argue that, no, this is still a step down. And in saying, okay, let's split this between two maps, and the maps are going to be roughly the size of the overland content, which is like the normal DLCs, really does a number on trying to make that kind of comparison and putting it out there and saying, oh yeah, no, but it's so small, right? Like, no, it's split between these two maps.
I think this is smart.
Yeah, it is.
It's just
also kind of amusing realization that Blackreach in ESO is actually going to be larger than Blackreach in Skyrim, fairly substantially.
That's
because when you actually get loose in Blackreach in ESO, or not ESO, sorry, in Skyrim in TES5, the space feels really expansive, but having spent a lot of time wandering around down there, it's not actually that large. It's a fairly... it's large in comparison to the stuff you're used to dealing with in that game, because most of it's fairly tight corridors when you're inside a dungeon. And it is just a dungeon zone. There's no way to zone directly down there in Skyrim. You have to go through one of the entrance points. And as a world space, it's actually fairly small and fairly compact, even though it feels larger than it is.
I think it's going to be interesting having something underground as a whole, because... it kind of breaks the mold of what we're used to over the last 5 years or so, because we're used to overland being all story stuff and out in the open where we can see the sky all the time. Right. And underground is either dungeon, delve, or trial. You go in, you kill something, you get out. It's quick, fast-paced stuff. Having, 40% underground, that's a lot of time without the sky, and that's going to feel really weird for long periods of time doing quests or whatever it is you're doing down there, and not just leaving like you would a normal delve. It's kind of like the dwarven area in Dragon Age, where you see a whole different roads. Side to how other people live. It feels kind of like that claustrophobic side of things. Even though it's massive, it just feels like you are now in the unknown. It's going to be really weird.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting though, because it's like he has all that mystery. There was rumors that from what Rich was saying on stage that you may encounter Falmer, which back then a thousand years in the past, what's a Falmer gonna be like? Have they already started mutating to what they are now? And so it kind of brings in the question of all this mystery, and this is something brand new that they haven't been underground before. Not really, to this extent.
No.
And so it's like, when they're taking this big of a gamble too, it's exciting. It's going to be really exciting to see the high points of that kind of content where you're underground and, like moving forward, will this be something they do again? It's going to be exciting.
I love that question right there. Yeah, I mean, there was speculation ever since the Game Awards trailer, the little snippet, the tiny teaser trailer at the end. People were suspecting, well, Dark Heart of Skyrim, are we going to go underground? Like, what's that entail? How much underground? How much time? People were saying for a whole chapter, well, will the whole map be underground? I really think that's why this 60-40 idea is really smart. Zynode, you touched on that idea of ESO's never shoved people into the dark caves for that long before. So this is going to be interesting. And Jib, since you're joining us today and mentioned this earlier, I really want to know, is there a piece of Blackreach that you're most interested in? Like, is there something you really find yourself wanting to explore there in particular?
Oh man, all of it.
Everything.
just all of it. Yeah. I mean, you see the screens and I'm just like, oh my gosh, Dwemer. Come, I'm there. I'll be there for extended periods of time taking screenshots. It's just all of it, the whole experience. Because Stark, you talked a little bit about it earlier, with Skyrim, with seeing in Skyrim, and now we're seeing, the whole twist of it with ESO and ESO style, as far as graphic wise. And so it's just going to be so unique. And I totally just want to go through all of it.
We've had a few teases at much larger underground spaces before. Cause like when you go into Fang Lair, you can actually see it's a much larger space than you're
interacting with. That's really cool.
There's also Cradle of Spiders where you can, I think it's like the third boss. It's the spider boss. When you go in there and you can actually look out, and there's an area that looks kind of like Blackreach, ironically, from Skyrim.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So Yeah. Next time you're in there, we'll point it out.
Pay attention to that one.
But yeah, it's cool, but you can't go into it. It's right. Not like, oh, hey, this is massive explorable space. It is something I'm looking forward to, though.
I wonder if the way shrines will be the same, because traditionally all of the way shrines we see are up above the ground, so they tend to be a specific design.
Yeah.
We've had some portals underground and such before, but if they're different, I wonder how many new players are going to get lost underground and can't find their way out.
Probably not that many, because, okay, so wait, no, think about this for a second. The way shrines actually change depending on your zone already.
Yeah, they do. That's true.
So like when you're going, for example, in the extreme end, when you're going to a place like Clockwork City, each of the way shrines is in a sphere. When you're in Skyrim, like, you know, the Rift or in Eastmarch, it's got a very Nordic look when you're
I mean, yeah. I don't mean shape of it. I mean, like the physical visual of it, not just the design, but will it be a way shrine as we know it with a little flame in the middle and
probably top of it,
or something completely different?
It might be like those little dwarven minarets,
exactly,
with, again, with a flame in the middle to indicate oh hey, it's a way shrine. But I think some of that still ends up as a functional design decision to make sure it's instantly recognizable to a player.
Sure.
Yeah, I do kind of want to see what they do with that, because this is the first time they really have an excuse to go with a Dwemer theme for the way shrines.
Right.
That button that opens up and is all mechanical stuff, and then bang, you end up upstairs.
And one of my questions,
I'm probably going to see those as gateways, though.
Yeah. Well, one of my questions for Rich was like, how are we going to get there the first time? Now, I did say that's through quests, so hopefully not too many players get lost down there, I hope. But I wonder if that means it's going to be a little Arteum kind of feeling. You know, you have to go through the quest to unlock it, then go. Maybe. We'll see. Because I was curious, I think he did allude to there being another entrance to it, too. But I can't really remember if that's fact or fiction at this point. So many speculation.
I'll float the idea that I had a while back, which was that it might be a lot like with Skyrim itself, where you've got basically you've got delves that you enter into, and they've got two entrances. We've already seen that with King's Pass and Somerset. But one entrance connects to Blackreach, and the other entrance connects to the surface. That would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Especially, I forget the lore book, what it is, but basically, there, to sum it up, there was this philosopher. All he did was, you know, he studied the Dwemer, right? And he had no idea this entire time, when he was going deep into these old Dwemer ruins, that hidden at the very deepest part of these ruins was an entryway that took you to Blackreach. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did something like that. That'd be really cool.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah. Now, the catch there is, I remember in Skyrim, the structure was such that you actually needed a specific quest item. I can't remember what it was. It was like a sphere or something in order to open the gateways. There was a sort of there was a mechanical stair design where the steps would collapse down from the platform around you, and then you could down that. But
how old was the entrance? Because you might see the entrance being made.
Oh.
No. The entrance was a Dwemer ruin, so that would predate us. I think when did the dwarves disappear? That was in the first era, wasn't it? We've got Jibs here. When did the dwarves disappear?
Jibs, nice.
When did they disappear? Oh, man, I don't have that off the top of that.
Exact time and date, sir.
Is that the 22 something in the first era? Like 2200
something? 6:47 in the evening after dinner.
No. Well, that explains it. I usually vaporize in the evening.
Don't we all, though? Don't we all? Yeah, I think that'll probably have been built by then, though, like you were saying, Stark, at that point. So I don't know if we'll get to see anything constructed, but I'm super curious to see what vampires are doing down there. Like, this whole castle underground. I'm also curious, the housing community has been buzzing. Thoughts on a home down there? Because that's... What Chip's just said.
Wait a second. What was... what was the thing with Potemma? Like, in Skyrim, there's this whole thing with Potemma, the Wolf Queen, one of the Queens of Solitude. I think she had a claim on the Imperial throne, didn't she?
Ranger just mentioned this woman to me yesterday. Yeah.
There's a whole quest line with her reanimated corpse in Skyrim. I'm trying to remember. Was she? She must have been first era, because she would have been post Alessia. But I'm wondering if she had if that would be like, that's one way in, that you'd end up with vampires getting down there, because that's close to Solitude.
Oh.
The stuff with her is close to Solitude. It's not tied into the Dwemer ruins, but it's possible from what we saw in the screenshot or the screenshot in the trailer that there's other access points to Black Reach we didn't know about that might not be accessible to humans, but are fine if you can turn into a cloud of bats.
Well, that's an interesting point, because that's what that guy did in the trailer, turned it into a cloud of bats.
Vampires only.
So should we talk about this for a little bit? Because for those that don't know, that vampire, and there is actually a lot of confusion about this, so this is a good chance to clear some of it up. So ESO is doing a full vampire overhaul or revamp, as you may say, because they are going to rework all, it seems like all active and passive skills. We know of three abilities that they have mentioned thus far. The Blood Scion being the ultimate, your chance to turn into a vampire lord. They mentioned mesmerize skill, so something about confusing your enemies. And as the last, what was the last one? Some sort of, were they talking about bat clouds staying around? They mentioned something.
They'd have to keep the bat swarm in some way or another, because it's in the video. They can't nuke that.
Exactly. No. I mean, this
I remember them saying something about
mesmerize skill would be awesome. But in which sense? Like something that holds it still, or something that can have some form of control?
That's a good question.
We don't have any way to temporarily
charm.
Yeah, well there's no charm effect. There's no ability to confuse an enemy and get them to attack their allies in the game.
Please
right now.
Control undead. Please control undead.
Oh, that would be really
necromancer vampire control and undead enemies. Yes, sold. Done.
I'm in.
Because right now if you want the sort of vampire psychic powers that shtick, you kinda need to run a Nightblade. Because you get aspect of terror from that, where you can just terrorize enemies and just do that. But yeah.
So Jibs, do you roll any vampires, or you?
Oh yeah, bro.
Okay, you're a good vamp man. Glad to hear it.
Oh yeah,
that's what it's all about. Like I'm getting them ready for this.
Heck yeah! I hope there's a lot of people doing that. It's an exciting time, and you know, Zynote, I know you do a lot of builds, and I just I'm sitting here learning and listening to you guys talk about the skills, and gosh, I'm excited just to see what happens with builds when it comes to the vampire skill. And I'm excited just because I look forward to playing and theory crafting it for my PvP build. So that's, to me, that's one of the most exciting parts. And of course, being able to turn to a blood scion just sounds awesome.
Iconic, right? That's the big thing.
Issues with that.
Do you? Okay, we'll give Stark a to vent his woes.
Okay, so the entirety of Elder Scrolls lore, and this is, Jibs is probably intimately aware of this, is it's all based on in-setting literature. A researcher goes out and is like, oh, I found a story about this, or I saw this, or, this is in the local myth, and I wrote it down. And then, 300, 400 years later, we find the book, and it's like, okay, well, this is this piece of information. And it creates a collage of information that's a little difficult to completely square away. There's always a little few mysteries and things we don't know about, especially if something's rare enough or obscure enough that we can't be sure if it's real or not. That's actually the case with were-sharks. There's hints scattered through that these things exist, but there's not enough to say, oh yeah, no, this is actually a thing. Were-sharks might not exist.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, doesn't it? And yet they do have basis in the text, and not just in there's the trashy novels that are Captain What's-His-Face, the were-shark pirate thing. But there's actually a fair amount of stuff in this. I think they even show up in the Onycanthropy book that's scholarly. And there's a similar body of text with vampires in the Elder Scrolls. So when you're going from 1 to 2 to 3, or sorry, from Daggerfall to Morrowind to Oblivion to Skyrim, there's a body of scholarly literature that exists on Tamriel about what vampires are, what they're capable of. I think we even had hints of the blood scion rite, like the one that actually creates the Children of Lemay, as early as Skyrim or Oblivion, but not the details. And of course, we've known about Lemay for a while as a character, even before we encountered her in ESO. One thing that did not show up anywhere at all until Dawnguard was the vampire lord transform. And this makes sense, because when you're looking at Skyrim and you're like the actual structure of the game and the world inhabits, there's maybe three vampire lords prior to the player getting there. Because you've got Harkin, you've got Serana, and you have spacing on her mother's name.
Oh yeah.
But you have those three. Valerica. And outside of that, it's distinctly possible there aren't any. And Harkin's dialogue actually kind of suggests he expected the player, like, expected the last Dragonborn to die when he fed on him, him, her.
Hmm.
So when you're looking at it, it makes a lot of sense that these things don't show up in the lore, and that the description of the Volkahar clan doesn't really, from Oblivion, doesn't really sync up with what we see in Skyrim, because they are very reclusive, and because the ones that actually have this power are truly rare. I've got issues when that ability is being handed to every player. And then it's like, okay, so throughout the entirety of history in Tamriel, no one survived encountering a vampire lord, except for that time when flaked out and rift and just went nuts, killing everyone and racked up a 15 million gold bounty.
That's a fair point.
That bugs me. It really does.
It's a fair point. I mean, I've heard a couple people mentioning that over time, that, you know, that it doesn't match up. That is kind of a concern. Chips, do you have thoughts on that? Like, the it's the democratizing of it, if you will. Like, it's going from rare to common.
I mean, I don't have an exact answer for it, but I'll just say this. I feel like it's one of those things that's going to be revealed through the story as to why this is happening. Because I would feel like going into this, when they're writing this, like, that would be an obvious question, right?
Yeah.
Like, look, these were incredibly rare, you know, or, you know, I've heard concerns about, oh, this, or quote unquote vampire lord has horns. The other one doesn't, you know, what's going on? So it's like, okay, is this a different kind? Is this something else we're dealing with? Maybe that Harkin didn't know about. I mean, there's all these unknowns, right? And so you can just sit and theory craft about it. But I really feel like it's just one of those things that's going to be most likely revealed through the story.
I get the feeling this is going to be one of those things where they kind of have to walk back and fix it later. And that's fine. It happens. Just straight up, that up until this point, the idea of vampires having a, I guess let me just use the world of darkness term for lack of a better term, but having a war form, even if there's variations of it, just not being in the literature before this as an oversight. Then there is some room to say, oh yeah, that was 1,000 years ago. We think that bloodline died off and all that. And it's just like, there's some room for that, because a lot of the lit in the previous games is actually practical. It's dealing with vampires that you might actually face, and not, oh, hey, here's stories from 1,000 years ago about vampires with powers we can't square away. But it is, like I said, it does bother me a little bit. It's this weird little, yeah.
Oh, that's very fair. I'm sure it's a little bit similar in a way to how people were very nervous about necromancy, you know, getting all through the cities and all of that. So, I mean, that's an interesting tie-in, too, that I didn't even mean to make. But we are seeing vampires added to the justice system now.
Yep.
So
I like this.
Yeah.
I know you've got issues with the justice system, but I do like this in general, even if I do agree with you that the justice system is not that fantastic.
Oh, yeah. All I'm saying, taking kind of welcome Jibs into my thought on this one, is I think the justice system, it just needs a next step. That's all. It just needs a next, except unkillable guards. I just don't think that's the solution. I am kind of happy that they're putting, you know, the necromancers now committing crimes, and then we have the vampire on that. So it does seem likely we'll eventually probably see werewolves fall into that category at some date, and maybe that will be the build up to them giving us a next stage to the justice system, like was
what
so
do you,
long yeah. proposed.
What are you looking you for with the justice well. System?
Well, I think the only thing, so my major complaint, like I said, right now, is it feels very, it's just the surface value. You know, you commit a crime, the guard comes, they smack at you. If you know how to play the game, you'll just dodge roll and they'll never kill you. It just feels a little silly in that way. So one of my favorite ideas the community's mentioned is do something like Fable did before, for anyone that played Fable, where the guards would just get progressively harder until then they basically one-shot you, right? But at least it would provide anything, really, that's not just an infinite health dude that can barely kill you until he cheats.
Sure.
But I think we're getting there, right? Like, we're seeing, I don't know if they'll actually do a next step, but we're at least seeing them recognize the justice system on a yearly basis at this point. That's something. Yeah. I take that as positive.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think it's one of those things where it's baby steps with the justice system for whatever the back end reason is. You know, if you're a fly on the wall, you know, being able to listen, we'd obviously, you know exactly why, but it's just one of those things where it's just going to, I think it's going to just take time. I mean, unless they dedicate a whole update to it, you know, sort of thing. I think it's just going to take time to see that. Because that, I mean, you know, you bring up Fable. I love Fable. It's such a good series. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. But, you know, so yeah, I like that idea too. I love that. You know, they really have, they could take it just about anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we're, if the justice system was a book, I feel like we're in the prologue with it, to be honest with you.
That's been.
Well said, actually, because Stark and I on the show many moons ago covered the idea of that, you know, they were going to do a system with bounties where players would be able to go out and collect, and we talked all about
that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I need that.
Yeah, because it was originally pitched as going to be a PvP experience in the open world. This is way back, I think 1.6 or 1.5.
Huh. Do you mean like WoW, where you switch on, switch off?
Yeah, it was... do you remember the... The stuff from back then, Zai?
I remember a lot of stuff from back then, but it's hazy.
Okay, fair. The basic idea originally was that you would have players who would flag themselves as enforcers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a bounty, you were going to be flagged for PvP with enforcers, like in combat with them. So the entire structure was going to be law enforcement was player driven.
We need that.
And keep in mind, this was also a long time before we actually had the justice system, a long time before we had level scaling across the board.
Yeah.
So we're looking back at, hold on a sec. I have no idea.
While you're doing that, I just want to say, I think Jibs was onto something with the idea that we could be looking at another sort of large scale update. Now, I don't mean to be making predictions right now about things so far out, but I mean, I do want to talk antiquities with Jibs while you're here. That's the first time in a long time we are seeing a big, non-questing, non-killing system in the game. So, what do you think about that, man? That's amazing.
Absolutely. It's amazing on multiple levels. It's great for marketing, right? Mm-hmm. You're able to pull in players if combat isn't their thing. You know, if that's not, you know, if they're going out, I mean, trials aren't their thing, battlegrounds, PvP, none of that. They just love to absorb the Elder Scrolls. Okay, boom, you have it right here with Antiquities. You can take your time, go out, and you're, you know, this sounds silly, but I mean, you're out there seeking lore, right? I mean, that's really what you're doing. And you get to just embrace decades of Elder Scrolls lore. I mean, they talk about when up on stage, they talked about, I don't remember the exact verbiage, but I remember Rich saying something around the idea that, look, you're going to be able to learn about lore from the past or even in the future. And there was just kind of that tease there with that. Wow. And so it was really left open. And so, yeah, I love the fact that they're catering, and that may not be the right word, but they're really catering to an even broader player base with this. You're going to bring in so many more players and help solidify why ESO is what it is and where it's at.
I'm going to agree with that. And I'm also going to not necessarily swerve, but just note that this is a different gameplay style, but it kind of puts you into a roleplay-esque situation where, you know, when you go into a dungeon and you meet the NPC, mm-hmm. the NPC is looking for something and you're killing all the stuff and the NPC is doing whatever it's doing.
Yeah.
That now puts you in the role of that NPC. You are the one excavating and looking for stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you are in the place where you have to go past monsters first and you're not combat driven, you can take a friend with you to be kind of your protector while you look for stuff.
Oh, that's
that then changes the way that the mechanics of a group actually works.
Yeah.
For that content. It's a really good idea.
I heard Cash raving about that too when we were actually there. Like that was the thing he kept muttering as we were stunned with information. He was like, "I can't wait to get the guild. We need to do some lore runs and go get this."
Yeah,
that was amazing. Yeah,
we're so excited about that. Just the idea of just going out and just seeking lore. You're out there just enjoying and embracing lore, and that's a great thing too. Like there is, you know, with combat, it's intense. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got all these things going on. You're dodging, you know, if you're doing trials, I mean, you guys know you're dodging things, you're rolling, you're making sure you're blocking and all these things. Whereas this, it's just, I mean, like this is like great recliner gameplay. Like you're just relaxing and just chewing on all kinds of lore. And on top of that, you're getting amazing rewards. You know, they talk about the chest piece and then the ring that, you know, with the speed boost, speed buffs.
Oh, sorry.
So, I mean, it's just, it sounds amazing.
It yeah, really it does. Yeah. And scalable. Can we talk about that for a second? Because that's what I grilled Rich on. I was like, so this is not a one and done thing, right? 2021, we're getting more of this. And I was proud, very, very ecstatic to hear him say that they made it. So it from its very roots is a scalable system that they can add to as new content comes to the game, as long as people are interested in it. Lore seekers, get all your people really hyped up for it, because I know I'm going to be doing the same.
I suspect that even if the experience isn't particularly enjoyable, this is kind of a horrible end of the spectrum to aim
but
at.
Sure, but sure, go for it.
Even if the experience isn't enjoyable, it's still going to be popular, if nothing else, for the mythic gear, assuming that lives up to the hype. Because just access to gear that fundamentally messes with things in a way that you can't do with set bonuses is going to be appealing to players.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing how that tweaks builds. You know, what crazy hybrids are we going to start seeing simply because of mythic gear?
Great point, actually. That's really solid. Plus furnishing items, PvP items. Like, what a crazy amount of just stuff that they're going to provide through that. So, Stark, I get the vibe, and we all know this here in this chat, but I really get the vibe, or got the vibe from Rich, that they're going to listen intently on the system. And I think if it doesn't feel amazing at first, I do think this is the start of them being more serious towards the non-questing, non-killing side of it. So I think if for some reason this launched, and let's say it wasn't bells and whistles, and it was kind of a little lackluster, I think they'd swap some things in there immediately. Like, I just got that vibe that this is a system that they really want to explore, and it's a new... We've always said here on this show that we'd love to see more items come into the game through natural in-game progression instead of crown store buys. And this seems like a solid way to introduce that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and that mount that they've previewed, it's kind of ironic, that mount they previewed has been floating around in the game files since, I think, Morrowind.
Wow.
Like, the Morrowind PTS was the first time we got a look at it in data mining. And the assumption at the time was that it was going to be a crown crate mount. So it's really nice to see this stuff actually just coming straight into players. There is a huge backlog of stuff that has been data mined at one time or another off the PTS that has never made it into the crown store or into game. It'd be nice to see a lot of stuff coming through with this system and moving forward, which I think is a distinct possibility.
A very good point. I mean, this is gonna be crazy. So this, again, for anyone that doesn't know, Antiquities, it's gonna be a guild in Solitude you pick it up from. It's gonna be two different skill lines, scrying and excavating. So part of it's a color and shape match game that's scrying, and then you go, and once you have your lead on the item, you go out there and excavate it multiple times too, I heard. Like, you can actually get the same item more than once, which will, I guess, deepen your knowledge of that item. Is that what I heard? Did anyone else catch that?
Yeah, it sounded like you'd be doing the same thing a couple of times, the same excavations a couple of times to complete the lore entries at least.
I like that.
Which makes
awesome.
Yeah, makes me think at least part of the system is going to be randomized per instance. It's not going to be like, oh, it's this solution to this puzzle every time. Because if that was the case, going through the motions again a second time would just kind of be rogue behavior. It wouldn't be interesting. So that tells me that this has to have some randomization element.
Right. Huh.
It would need to be able to be repeated rather than done it once, move on to the next, never come back again.
Right.
I have a total off-the-cuff question to ask you guys, but do you think in any way the Glenmoral tracking down of those weapons and stuff, the witch, the motif style, do you think any of that was almost precursor, like trial, just to see how people reacted to the idea
of say yes.
Hunting
it
things?
Wouldn't surprise me.
That looks like it was deliberately designed for a hunt and find type mechanic, and this is basically that.
I thought that was pretty
I think that was I would assume as a prototype for this.
Yeah.
Definitely putting feelers out.
It was fun to stuff too. Like, I liked that. So I can already, like, that's why that came to mind. I was like, when have I last been out hunting things? Treasure chests, sorry, those kind of have lost any sort of luster and glossiness to me. I don't do treasure maps myself, but when it comes to chasing down motifs, that's a different story.
That's a funny thing though, because the treasure maps, this is the problem. The treasure maps and also the surveys are not, they're not randomized at all. It's always the same locations, to the point that I've had a number of conversations with people who do a lot of crafting where it's like, oh, yeah, we hate that survey. And you can tell them which survey it is, which zone it is, like which crafting survey and which zone. and they immediately know what you're talking about. Especially stuff like the Malabeltor Alchemy Survey. Holy crap, why?
Dude, when I first saw the treasure maps in the game, when I first started, when I first ever saw my first treasure map, I was like, oh my god, I know that place. I'm going to go find it. Add-ons in Google killed that.
Yeah.
So I don't enjoy treasure maps anymore.
That is
something different. And this looks pretty good for that kind of stuff.
I'm really amped. So, I think you're right.
The other reason...
add-ons in Google do hurt a lot of MMOs. They, you know, really takes the mystery out of it. So hopefully this...
I really liked hunting for those locations. They were really, really cool. That was a nice touch to the game. But now, obviously, since we're so far into the game, that stuff is no longer new. Even for a new player, you can just go on the internet and find it straight away. So well, I think the new system is adding that first... kind of... Yeah, I think
it was that's... in the first 3 weeks, I think. Well, when did the treasure maps add-on go live? That was less than 2 months after launch.
It wasn't long after it.
Wow. Sky Shards was the same way. Those both went live very early.
Well, I hope they figure out a way to keep this maybe a little more obscure longer. That would be ideal to keep the mystery to the system. And again, hopefully we see additions to it over time. Like, I'd love to see them continue to roll this antiquity system out.
Definitely,
deepen our lore knowledge.
I hope when they release it that it's saturated enough to get a decent amount of gameplay out of it before they upgrade it and add more stuff to it. I hope it's not just a flash in the pan, done it for 5 minutes and it's gone. Here's what we're getting later in the year. I hope it's a substantial amount of content as far as that mechanic or game mechanic is concerned.
Oh, how many zones in game right now?
Loads. That's an accurate...
No, I mean, like, an actual estimate. We're at, like, what, 26, 27 zones?
27, I think.
Yeah, so...
Could be wrong.
Well, it's about right anyway. So if we got 27 zones, that puts us at... That's content for... Yeah, if they're actually serious about having at least one antiquity hunt in each zone, possibly more,
hopefully
that's going to be a lot of hunts. Like, right off the bat to start with.
Yeah, it is.
I think we could end up in a situation like three patches down the road where it's like you log in, you clear off the one or two that were added with the new DLC, and then that's it. You're done until the next thing, but... Yeah, I think even just right up front, if they've been careful to put them everywhere, we're looking at a lot of artifacts to hunt down.
If they base this very similar to that of lore books and sky shards, not on such a large scale, because there's lots of those, but somewhere in the middle and have multiple in each zone, that could also blow it to bits.
Oh, yeah.
Even three per zone. That's a substantial amount of work.
Think about lore books for a second, and this is... stepping back and saying, okay, well, there's going to be a mini game associated with it. With lore books, there's three or four locations for each book in each zone. So you'll go into a zone, you'll find it in one of these places. Even if you're working with just that model and you're saying, okay, there's potential antiquities and this specific antiquity could pop up in one of four places, but you have to go through the whole scrying process to locate it. And then that's there, and there's another 16 or so scrying sets in that zone. That's a lot of material. Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would be a little bit overkill, but I think at the same time, if you were using a node system like that, you could easily have 20 possible locations for a given artifact, which would mean it wouldn't be fully random, but it would be random enough that you couldn't just use a guide every time.
Yeah.
I hope so. And I hope it's not like, well, I kind of... sneak in that anyway, but I hope that you have to search using the scrying tool or whichever to locate it rather than just know where it is, because that would be too easy when the patch goes live and everyone would just hang around their away shrine, look for the flood of people all running the same way and just follow them.
Oof.
Well, I think the trick there is...
I did that with Super Gordo, I'm not lying.
Yeah, I think the catch there is to get a situation where the scrying tool is more efficient than brute forcing it.
Yes.
And especially if it's based around a sort of, there's multiple possible locations, it selects one of them randomly, but there's enough locations that it's going to be faster to use the tool and even faster to get caught and stumped by the tool a few times than it would be to simply brute force every possible location.
Yeah.
But it's definitely doable. It'd be weird, but I think it's definitely doable. It's just sort of, it's a wait and see right now.
So
it is.
Because this has a lot of potential.
General question for the whole audience here of how do you guys think, especially for our new players out there, we're really speculating here, by the way. How do you think this is going to fit into the questing or completion of a zone sort of thing? Like, very early on, do you guys predict that we'll be encouraging new players to immediately go pick up antiquities and then start questing through zones? No. Think it's going to be something secondary to that? What's everyone thinking?
Well, I would assume you kind of... you choice it kind of like the crafting skill lines. Like, you got to pick up a quest to get the line. You can do them beforehand, but you open up the opportunity. Same as the guilds, you open up the guilds and then you do the missions and all that kind of stuff. I think this is not going to be something that you just run out and start discovering things. I think you are going to have to deliberately go out there to start doing this rather than just, hey, you're in the world now, go.
Well, they have to do that
since they've
got
a guild quest for it anyway. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it's going to be necessarily something that's thrown in their face or something they have to do, but I think it's going to be accessible. I would definitely assume that. I'd hope they don't put a minimum level on it, at least.
They did. We already know they did. No, really? Seriously, we do. Yeah, because from what Rich said about... So we know one of the rewards...
Didn't he say 160 gear. For the mythic items?
Yeah, the mythic items will always drop at 50, 160.
But Is that the case, though? Is it a case of the whole thing is locked at 160 or only the mythic item finding is?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. Like, do you gate the getting the item or do you give an item that a new player can't use to them?
Exactly.
I think there's a better solution to that, which is to, like, if the mythic items operated the way stuff like the Dubious Camoran Throne and the Crown Store consumables worked, where it scales to your level.
Yeah. So you put it on
like, then you could hand that to a new player and they'd be fine. They could get into the system immediately and then still have, like, they'd have something substantive that they could take with them as they explore.
Could you imagine a brand new player with that speed ring?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, I could. Because they're already slow as hell.
That'd be cool.
Because when you're starting out, you don't have a lot of stamina to sprint. You don't have a mount. And when you do get a mount, thing barely moves.
What a
I don't know. I think
to...
I'm
you're gotcha. Stuck in the carpool lane. So it's
you're right. New player with that spring though would be like stuff. Oh yeah, keep it in the bag. Leave it in the bag.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I think I'm kind of for that though. I like the idea that the more time you're in, the better you get. You know, it's the journey. Mm-hmm. It's more about the journey than not the destination.
Totally agree. Just think of how crazy that would change someone's playthrough, right? To find that speed ring very early on.
Oh my gosh.
But oh, I completed the story mode with this mythic item on and oh, it was easy because I ran really fast or whatever. Yeah.
But that's what those memories are made out of, right? Like when you go into a game and you're like, oh crap, random chance just set me off on this huge path. Like that's very fun.
Right.
Well, yeah, that was one of the best things with Morrowind was you'd find something like the Boots of Blinding Speed.
Oh, yes.
You know exactly what happened too.
Yeah,
it goes on and you'd go completely blind.
Oh, yep. Gosh.
But you could move like crazy.
I remember the jump scroll as well. I remember the jump scroll. You jump like 1,000 meters in the air, but you think it's great because you're doing a massive jump, but then you forgot about your landing. You have to come down 1,000 feet and hit the deck.
There's speed runs using that where they'll straight up use one, jump halfway across the map. Like they'll jump from that point all the way over to Tel Vaas and then cast the second scroll before they land. It's absolutely nuts. And they finish the game in like 5 minutes or something.
That's insane.
It is.
Well, you guys, we're kind of here towards the end of an episode. Any points that you guys want to rehash for Greymoor? Anything people want to talk out in particular? Anything you're ecstatic about, excited for, anything like that? Kind of talked.
All of it.
Right?
Yeah. I just want more information, but they can't give us that yet. So I just lost.
Fingers crossed they can get their ESO live going soon. I hope that
definitely.
Back.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But that's the thing because they've got the DLC coming for Harrowstorm, which is great. We're looking forward to it. But then because we know Greymoor's here, we're like, can we just hurry up and get Greymoor?
This is a complex. There is a complex issue where it's kind of like hoping for. I don't really know that we'll see it, but I would love to see Dawnguard as a joinable guild in quarter four, where it's antagonistic to being a vampire or a werewolf.
I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I think they might do a bigger Q3 and 4 this year. I think that there's something up their sleeve this year. I'm at least really hoping.
I think they should because the last ones were good, but a little small.
Mm-hmm. Very quiet releases, too.
I was surprised there wasn't a skill line associated with the Dragon Guard. Like, there wasn't just a full guild you joined with all the stuff, all the trimmings. in the full class line. Like, I really surprised me.
Wouldn't it be something if in Q3 they add a another new skill line and it's spellcrafting mm-hmm. and you go to winter roll?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'd be intense. I do think they could use another spike in marketing towards the end of the year. Like, I think if they did something like that, Jims, I think if they moved that in Q3, Q4, something, or Dawn Guard or whatever it is, I think they would really suit them well, especially Q4. End the year on a high note, especially right before the Christmas sales. Like,
oh yeah,
spellcrafting, holidays, Dawn Guard.
Absolutely.
Also, I do really suspect if they're going to add spellcrafting, that it's going to be in a quarter 4 DLC rather than in a chapter, simply because. Well, because this puts it in a situation where it's like anybody who picks up ESO Plus has access to this. It's a really substantial selling point to getting people to do that, as opposed to here's an incentive to buy the box for a zone.
That's a very good point, actually, especially based off of what we see anyway, as far as feedback is concerned, when Somerset landed for jewelry crafting. Mm-hmm. Because although that was a great addition to the chapter, that put a lot of sticks up people's butts when that came out, because they were like, I can't believe I have to buy this to do crafting in the game. And if spellcrafting followed a chapter, yes, of course I'm going to buy it, and so many, many other people. But landing on a DLC for ESO Plus specific, I think you're right, it would actually land a lot better inside the community's point of view as to what is accessible to them without too much extra money. Yeah. I think that would be a good time to land it. You're right.
And it ends up in a range where it becomes, here's another perk for ESO Plus if you don't buy the DLC.
Correct.
Yeah. I just, that's my feeling on that. I know it's a system with a lot of work going into it. And if they ever do bring that back and say, okay, we're doing this now, it is certainly enough material that they would justify being able to put it in a chapter. But I do think that with the way they've gone with stuff, especially with retrading, going into a end of year DLC the way it did, I really get the feeling that spellcrafting would follow suit.
That could, that was a substantial increase or change to the game's kind of customization for things. And I think spellcrafting would, depending on how deep they go into it, could possibly hit the same sort of impact. I think it's a good idea.
Jibs, you got us all really excited right there.
That would make perfect sense as well, because then, they'd have to hit bigger for the chapter for the next year, and that's fine, because they can just give us a monk.
Oh, okay.
Give us a monk, give us a dwarven. Give us a class that actually, like a dwarven antiquities expert, the twins or something, where it's like your entire class is built around, you know, scavenging through the ruins for cool toys to shoot people with.
That's a neat.
Is there a sub where it's like infinite, so sub forever?
Lifetime membership, right?
You know, that surprised me that there wasn't an LTS offer ever for ESO.
Well, that's the question we get to ask Jibs, especially right now. Like, what's your crazy ask? Like, if you had something, you know, not based in reality, if, you know, what's the one thing you'd want added? You can take it as big or small as you want, honestly, because I know they come to me all the time.
Whenever we were talking with Rich was like, you know who holds the keys of the Dwemer, right? And we're like, who? Tell us, Rich, who? And he's like, Todd Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Todd Howard loves walking around and being the only one who knows what happened to the Dwemer. And it's like his thing, right? Well, the wall of crazy would be to have the Dwemer come back in some fashion. Or, you know, I've always said this on Lore Seekers, and I'll say it here too. Like, the Dwemer disappeared, right? But their schematics are still around. So I would still love to see some kind of tinkerer skill line where you can build mounts, you can build just different parts, you know, build armor, something similar to Sotha's Sill. I know that's crazy sounding, but just, you know, something different in that regard.
It's different, but man, it exists though, right? I mean, we see that sort of stuff in the game all the time. I'm thinking, you know, right away when you roll a DC character in the actual, you know, quest storyline there, you go through and you meet that guy right on one of the starter islands.
That one
in the Ramo?
Yeah, is it not? It's because he's not the one on Betnik, right? He's the other island.
With the sphere he's working with?
Yeah, well, there's the one on Betnik. Yeah, there's the one on Betnik. His name's escaping me. It's not Naramo. It's somebody else.
I think
there's
that's
also
a
the
really,
twins.
Yeah. I think this is a
that
really.
That you run into in the pact. And there's, what's his face in Dominion? Who's actually, he's more of just a general antiquities expert. But there's him. There's also Clarice Laurent.
Wouldn't that be crazy if that was our Q4 thing, where some sort of tinkerer thing that ties in with Black
Archaeologist
Reach?
Class?
Yeah, right?
That'd be nuts.
The combat.
That'd be nuts. Putting the class, well, also putting the class on a DLC instead of the chapter would be wacky.
Well, like you guys said, go ahead, Jibs.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it makes sense off of what you guys just said about the, you know, it being part of ESO Plus then. So that was all tips. Yeah. You're four.
I always liked the, this was pre, well, this is like when ESO first launched and, you know, I was dabbling with Guild Wars 2. I always really enjoyed the engineer class. I always thought it was really unique and just different. And so bringing something similar to that as a class, that'd be crazy.
That would. That'd be really cool. So many people would be ecstatic. Honestly, what a year to, if you were going to do it. I worry for their own workload. You know, a necromancer last year, I don't think they could do a whole class this year per se. I that's my guess. But to see any sort of additional skill line that even skirts around that would be really cool. I think a tinker Absolutely. Class would be amazing. It would make people very happy because I think the big three asks I've been seeing a lot of for classes, monk, I've definitely seen the tinker. Bard. And what's the other one? The bard? The bard. Yep.
The bard got a lot of attention.
The bard.
Even looking back at with the way Skyrim was set up, I don't really see the bard ever coming in as a as a full class,
it's like as a skill line and stuff like that, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, D&D also like
I
freaking mained a bard in 3.5 because holy crap, that thing was broken. But
I just hope that they add a bard. Really fast with music playing. I hope that they add a bard. They do right by the people that want an actual bard and not just a skill line. Like that's, I mean, I understand why it could just be a skill line, but for the people wanting it, I hope they get the full
That's the difficult thing. Part. In Elder Scrolls, that's the difficult part because when you go back to stuff like D&D and EverQuest and such, that was a full class with very specific abilities and roles and all the rest of it. Whereas in ESO, that's kind of a job description.
Right.
So everyone could do it technically. So that,
well, yeah.
Although we'd want to see it as a class, I think mechanically, I mean, as far as skills and options are concerned, it would make sense to put it in a skill line.
Well, it's also weird when you bring it up D&D.
Accessibility-wise. Like
the role of the bard, especially in 3.5 and 3rd edition, really is to have a jack-of-all-trades character who can fill in for whichever party member got killed. It's a healer, but not as good as your cleric or your druid. It's a fighter, like it's a frontline combat unit, but it's not as good as your fighter or your ranger or basically anything else that's actually got a decent hit die. It's your rogue, at least socially, but also if they're taking the skill points in the right place, that can be almost as good as your rogue, but you don't have the benefit of things like backstab.
Backstab and stuff,
like it just, it was designed specifically as a class to be able to stick somebody in and replace a party member who got downed. In an emergency. And there's really no purpose for that in ESO. Because partially we're running on a 4-man group, but it's not a DPS class. It's not a healer. It's not a tank. It's really not a tank. And it's not, we don't have the necessity for an actual dedicated buff tank, like a buff class to just come in and support the way it works. The only way, And the only way you could make it work is if you're doing something really wacky, like, okay, well, it doesn't take a party slot going into a dungeon, but that would just be broken as hell.
I wonder how a tinker would fit too, because they in some ways feel maybe almost similar the way a bard feels to me. I mean, you could go probably full attack, full DPS with it.
I think you could make an argument on the bard on the tinkerer where it's like, okay, so you have the grounds to tank, right? Like you can have the armor that you've made from Dwemer gear. Oh, you can actually have like the full Dwemer exosuit potentially.
You can have pets. Like
you're running around in Dwemer power armor. Yeah, you have pets for crowd control or for damage. So like if you're doing damage, you could be doing damage with your pets and your whatever weapons you're bringing in. And if you're wanting to heal, you could be patching people up somehow.
I think we need to implement this idea. Jibs, you're on
so the team like, AoE damage.
Yeah, no, seriously. Like, it can be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, too. It's like, all right, so does future content relate to the tone of the chapter in that? So currently, we're getting ready to experience something very dark, very just visceral, very gothic feeling, right? The future, you know, are they going to choose to something maybe a little more whimsical, something, you know, like to kind of come off the gothic feel? And then if that was the case, what would you pair with that? So it's like, all right, maybe something, you know, let's just go with that. So whimsical, feeling something different. All right, would a tinkerer fit? Would that make sense to go along with that chapter? Would that be something you could expect? I don't know. But
after excavating a Dwemer ruin?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'd say serious maybe.
when somebody says whimsical in relation to Elder Scrolls, my first thought is actually Shivering Isles.
Yeah, there you go.
I really want it. There you go. I said that before. I want it.
Chibs, you're setting up the whole thing.
Actually, funny thing. So Elder Scrolls Legend is basically on indefinite hiatus now. Like, there's no new cards coming out. But there for a while, they were releasing stuff sort of in keeping with Elder Scrolls. Or with ESO. Sorry, no, with Elder Scrolls. With Elder Scrolls Online. Like, they got a Morrowind release. They got a Elsewhere release right before I stopped playing. I think they had stuff that was high elf. They had Alliance War. They actually got an Alliance War set. Mixed in all of this, they did actually get a Shivering Isles release. And it was just kind of there as this weird thing. Now, they'd also done an actual TES5 Skyrim release. It's not like, oh, this is giving us a cue that they're coming to Skyrim for ESO. But I do remember that there was actually a specifically a Shivering Isles release for that. And I was like, wait a second. And thinking about that and remembering, like, also Rich did work on Oblivion. He's, I assume, has fond memories of that. I don't think she asked him directly how he felt about Oblivion, but he certainly enjoyed it enough to want to continue doing stuff with the Elder Scrolls.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Wanted to make that an online game even then. So
I love this. Damn it, Jibs, you just told you just informed my decisions on what sort of class I want next. And it's a real one too. It goes, you know, this that sort of your idea flies in the face of what Stark has an issue with the Vampire Lord, right? Like, we already see a bunch of these tinkerers out there. So that is one that just kind of blends into the background, right? You don't need to write stories of every single tinkerer you come across. Well, when you see a Vampire Lord come out of nowhere, that's something a little memorable. But this...
Half the people who are writing the lore books are tinkerers or magic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Damn. Well, I think that's kind of about all the time we have for this episode. I mean, we all are very, very hyped for a lot of this Greymoor content. Again, to everyone out there, like, this Harrowstorm stuff, bear with them with the re-download of the game. That's going to be a nice hard drive space saver once you do it. Also, reminder, they're going to give out that Crimson Torchbug pet. So buy, and that sounds like it's going to be in the Crown Store for you to redeem for free. So you go in-game, open up Crown Store, get that Torch Bug whenever they do this, and this will be post the Harrowstorm DLC. I think it's update 25. Yeah.
You weren't here when they did this the last time.
Oh, okay.
With Clockwork City, it wasn't a full re-download of the game. I don't remember what provoked it, but with Clockwork City, they released a, Ebony Basilisk, I think, for players. So it was in the store for free. Yeah, you remember that thing?
The
robot snake? Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen
it. It was in the Crown Store. It was free for everybody. I think it was there for like, I think it was a month, actually.
Yeah.
You just log in, claim it. Yeah. So they've done that before where it's just, this is going to be in the Crown Store and you claim it, it's free, and, you know, now you have it.
Perfect.
That was cool, actually.
Well, there you go, everybody. That's how you'll get your Torch Bug is what it sounds like. And then we're all still waiting, if you were in the Bethesda stream, for the actual reveal in Vegas. If you're in that live stream, you should be getting your Bat Pet here sometime very soon in February. So fingers crossed we all get that very, very soon. That's very lore appropriate for this year going into the more vampire stuff. Jibs.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us where we can find you and the Lore Seekers all across the internet? Pimp your stuff. All right, man.
Right on. My personal Twitter is at JibsIRL on Twitter, and then the show at Lore Seekers Cast. And then you can find all the lore lessons, and we put those out in compilations, we call them. So you'll have like 5 to 8 hours of just Elder Scrolls lore, all from the show. And so we have all our episodes, everything, all over at loreseekerspodcast.com. That's also where you can find the community. And then, of course, YouTube, and Cash runs the Instagram. So Instagram and various other outlets, so it's all there.
Basically, search up Lore Seekers and there is a wealth of information. You guys are absolutely killing it over there. I've loved what's coming out. Oh yeah, it's been absolutely phenomenal. And I can't wait to get the chance to meet you in person. I mean, that's
I'm gonna hug your face.
Yes. it was really fantastic meeting Cash. I mean, you guys are as amazing in person as, you know, the online. You never know how that goes until you meet up. Cash and I were just going crazy sharing ideas, you know, about each other's content and all this as we're walking between hotels. So hopefully
just a big teddy bear.
Right? Hopefully you and I finally get our meet up soon.
Yeah, buddy, you going to E3?
That's what I was actually just about to ask. I am aiming for that. Are you going?
Ooh, yeah, man. Hell
yeah. Okay. Zynode, are you... I know that's expensive to come in, but I know you came for last year's E3.
I did go for last year's, yeah, because I went to Bethesda E3. If I can make it, I'll go.
You'll be there.
I've got some saving to do.
All right. Well, this is the point.
That's expensive.
In the year, we all start putting out our little donation dish, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Who wants to help us go to E3 this year?
Pay for my amazing trip, please.
Drunken bar picks will be delivered post haste. So
it's really, really good, man. It's definitely worth it, but it's expensive to get there. Well, from me anyway.
I mean, sure.
It's expensive in the US, but from the UK,
yeah.
We'll see.
Oh yeah,
that'd be really fun to do a big meet up there. I'd love to do
it. It would be awesome.
That'd be very cool.
Absolutely.
Well, for us, I will just say all of our various links are in the show notes. So if you guys are looking for myself, Zynode, or Stark, you can find those in the show notes. We have tons of different outlets. Stark, you're a part of the How to Fight Right over on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. That's something people should absolutely check out. Zynode, you're doing your Twitch streams, you're doing your builds, you're doing all of that. That's all at Zynode Gaming. You could search that and find it all. And for myself, everything at Kyle Dempster Studios. I figured I'd do a quick summary for the three of us because we could, you know,
do it.
Spend about 15 minutes doing our own outros.
Google it.
In the meantime, everyone that's listening, you must go support our friends over at the Lore Seekers Podcast. They are both phenomenal people. Thank you again, Jibs, for giving us the time of day to come on here and conclude all this hype, because like it's getting real, dude. Like you said way early the vibe. There's so many new people, right? They're all coming in. Yeah. They're all looking to get invested. So love it. I love your guys' outlook on it all, too. So, again, thank you for joining us this week. And we'll have to have you back on here in the future. To Stark and Zynode, thank you, as always, for sharing your infinite wisdom and teaching us all something. Even Stark teaching us memory at the beginning of the episode. So, look at you go. Okay, everybody, thank you for listening to us. And until next week, enjoy your journeys across Tamriel, and we'll catch up with you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.